and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita. Go ahead.
You will be the guest today.
Yeah.
I don't think you should be the guest. Okay. And I'm Jean Marie.
Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX.
And I'm Ron, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Everybody give a wave over to Jack.
Hello,
hi, Jack.
Hey, Jack. Just don't say hijack.
No, hijack is a bad word.
Right.
Hello, Jack.
Yeah.
On today's show, we are going to talk about the vagus nerve.
The vagus nerve? Is that like when you're in Las Vegas and you've been drinking too much and you got a lot of nerve to gamble all your money away?
Yeah, Ron. Let's go with that one. That was Jean's.
Yep, let's go ahead. Lita's going to be stepping all over me today. Great. So, Lita's never been to Vegas, so
what?
She doesn't know about that. We might be going next year.
Yeah.
And the nerve is actually, it's the vagus nerve, and it's an important one. So let's talk about that. The vagus nerve, spelled V-A-G-U-S, and so sometimes also referred to as cranial nerve 10, is actually a set of nerves, and it's the main nerves of your parasympathetic nervous system. The vagus nerve, also known as the vagal nerves, are the main nerves of your primary parasympathetic nervous system. And this system controls specific body functions such as your digestion, your heart rate, your immune system, things that you're not actually, you know, you don't physically control with, you know, through thought. These are automatic things. And these functions, so they're involuntary, and they're not under conscious control. They are part of the autonomic nervous system, and they're responsible for the rest and digest response. It's the opposite of your sympathetic nervous system, your fight or flight response. And the two nervous systems make up your autonomic nervous system. And this system controls involuntary body activities.
Okay, I'll be Jean now.
Okay. It's like when somebody from the UK says, I'll be mother.
Ah.
But different.
Okay.
I'll just stay me today.
Okay. Yeah.
There's one vagus nerve on each side of your body.
Okay.
Your vagus nerves are the longest cranial nerve running from your brain to your large intestine.
That's a long ways.
It is. Your left vagus nerve travels down the left side of your body. And the right vagus nerve travels down the right side of your body.
Fancy that.
Vagus is the Latin word for wandering. Your vagal nerves take a long, winding course through your body. They exit from your medulla oblongata in your lower brainstem. Then the nerves pass through or connect with your neck between your carotid artery and your jugular vein, your chest or your thorax, your heart, your lungs, and your abdomen and digestive tract.
Ron, do you want to be Lita?
Go ahead, be me.
Sure. Your left and right vagal nerves join to form the vagal trunk. They connect to your esophageal hiatus. You know, I should have looked at this before I started reading it.
And did you know that you're going to be Lita? Yeah.
That was pretty good.
I'm in touch with my...
Notice how I passed it on.
Good job.
I'll start that over.
You did well.
I'm okay if I like take a look at it real quick beforehand. But anyways, to get back on track, your left and right vagal nerves join to form the vagal trunk. They connect to your esophageal hiatus, the opening where your esophagus passes into your abdominal cavity, your belly, actually.
Okay.
And the vagal trunk includes the anterior, which is the front, and the posterior, obviously the back, the gastric nerves that go to your abdomen. Your vagal nerve branches are inferior ganglion branch, and that serves nerves and muscles to your throat, your pharynx, and your voice box or your larynx. Then there's also the superior ganglion branch that serves nerves that go to your spine and your ear?
That's what it says.
Huh. Hmm. Okay. And then the vagus nerve branch that serves nerves to your heart, lungs, and esophagus. It's a tube connecting your mouth and your stomach. So this is actually important. If you have a hiatal hernia or GERD, if you've ever heard of it before, and are considering a surgical repair called a Nissen fundoplication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why it's important, because... Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, because the Cleveland Clinic has an internet page dedicated to the vagus nerve and the conditions that can develop if the vagus nerve is injured, which is a potential risk involved with the Nissen fundoplication. Gastroparesis, which is when there's damage to the vagus nerve and it stops food from moving into your intestines from your stomach, because it is typically automated, but if the nerve is damaged, then it doesn't automatically proceed. This vagal nerve damage can result from other conditions as well, such as diabetes, viral infections, abdominal surgery, and scleroderma. Then there's the vasovagal syncope, and syncope is another word for, I don't know if it's another word for fainting.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. Yeah. Oh, I mean, okay. A vasovagal syncope occurs when the vagus nerve to your heart overreacts to certain situations or stimulus, like extreme heat, anxiety, hunger, pain, or stress, and your blood pressure drops very quickly, which is orthostatic hypotension, making you feel dizzy or faint, and sometimes losing consciousness temporarily.
All right.
Well, what are the signs of vagus nerve problems?
Well, vagus nerve conditions cause different symptoms depending on the specific cause and affected part of your nerve. You may experience abdominal pain and bloating, acid reflux, which is also called gastroesophageal reflux disease, or GERD.
Oh, which was what Ron had mentioned earlier.
Right.
Right.
Changes to the heart rate, blood pressure, or blood sugar, difficulty swallowing or loss of a gag reflex, dizziness or fainting, hoarseness, wheezing, or loss of voice, loss of appetite, feeling full quickly or unexplained weight loss, nausea, and vomiting. So the reason I am the guest today...
I wouldn't mention this.
Let's
not bring this up, because I think Greg would object.
Okay.
But I will say, sometimes, you know, like there is the possibility of having all these things, as we said, occur from certain medical conditions such as diabetes or injury to the nerves.
Okay.
So there was a recent article by Drs. DeVault and Stark that sums up research on the connection of vagal nerve damage from a surgical fundoplication. Although it's safe and effective in most patients, some patients will report persistent, recurrent, or new symptoms following fundoplication. These symptoms, as well as recurrent reflux symptoms, can develop due to recognizable technical or surgical complications, including disruption or herniation of the fundoplication.
Okay.
In addition, they may develop without obvious technical problems with the fundoplication. Common symptoms include dysphagia, gas bloat syndrome, and diarrhea. Successful management requires an understanding of the possible causes of post-operative symptoms and problems and a systematic evaluation of the patient.
Okay. And we'll make sure that we include that study on the webpage for this episode.
Yep.
And as with any procedure, you know, there's risk benefits. Mm-hmm. And so you want to make sure you ask your doctor before undergoing a procedure, and make sure you, you may actually have to stop and ask them specifically, what are the potential risks? What are the chances of those risks occurring? You know, like how many of your patients have experienced such complications? And what can we do if I happen to be one of those people who experiences those complications, or if there's, you know, an issue such as that? Because they may not come right out and say it, and you want to make sure you know, take those into account.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have a chart on the website as well that will try to explain this a little bit more. Symptoms after a fund application for GERD therapy may be the same as pre-operative symptoms, and they might be persistent or recurrent. And sometimes you have to have this procedure because otherwise the tissue could be strangulated and become gangrenous, which is a problem as well. So, you know, sometimes you have a choice and then you don't really have a choice. And there are new post-operative, and you might also have
new
post-operative right. symptoms. New symptoms that develop after a fund application fall into three main categories. The first group includes symptoms that can develop after fund application, even when there are no obvious surgical or technical complications. Symptoms that can result from surgically uncomplicated fund application include dysphagia, as we said before, gas bloat syndrome, diarrhea, and flatulence. The second group with a new postoperative symptoms includes patients where there is a recognizable complication of the fund application surgery, and it has led to new symptoms. Examples of symptoms from this category include a patient with dysphagia due to a tight or herniated fund application, or a patient with bloating that's related to inadvertent vagotomy?
Yeah, I think it is vagotomy. Okay. V-A-G-O-T-O-M-Y.
Well, and every generation likes to differentiate themselves from the previous generation, so they will change pronunciation.
Okay.
And language is ever evolving, and part of that is pronunciation changes and variations dependent on location and other things. So if we got it wrong, please let us know. We'd be happy to know that. And then you could also have delayed gastric emptying. And we were talking about dysphagia, so choking on food problems, where you're bloating, which I think a lot of people know what bloating or gas forms, or delayed gastric emptying, as we had said before about vagal nerve damage, can cause problems where it's not automatically transferring from one
organ
section
to
of
the next.
Yeah, one section of the digestive system to the next. And then the third group with new post-operative symptoms includes patients in whom the new symptoms are unrelated to active GERD or to the surgery. For example, like if you develop diarrhea due to an infection, infectious enteritis in the months after fund application. Also in this group are patients who report new post-operative symptoms, but on a closer analysis, it appears that the symptoms are actually present, where they were actually present preoperatively, and so that they were just not as obvious. And now that you've had the procedure, they're unmasked or more obvious because the primary GERD symptoms were controlled by the fund application, and now these other things are showing up. For example, a patient with a history of irritable bowel syndrome may have diarrhea that becomes more troubling to them after a fund application. And this, they might not have been as aware of this beforehand. And like we said, we'll have a lovely little chart so that you can look at all of these symptoms and, you know, get a clearer idea if you're a visual learner.
Hello, well, Charlie. I'll definitely put a chart on the website.
Okay.
And as far as diagnosis,
mm-hmm.
relying on the symptoms mm-hmm. seems to be the start of a diagnosis.
Okay.
It just isn't a well-studied problem. Okay. I have done quite a bit of research for this episode.
Okay.
And there just is not a lot of research into what's considered, it has a name, post-fund application syndrome.
Okay. And I will say, I mean, I don't know if this will give people out there hope or not, but after my traumatic brain injury, I had a lot of issues with dysphagia. I had no gag reflex. So that was a lot of fun because medical students would all come in and poke and see if they can make me gag. And unfortunately, like my epiglottis was not active at all.
Right.
And I had no gag reflex. And it was a worry because you can then have issues with like pneumonia and things of that nature. But things have gotten better for me since they corrected some issues, you know, some things. So, you know, there might be hope depending on what the situation is.
Right.
Don't give up hope.
Right.
Although I've never had a Neeson fundoplication.
Well, as I continue, not yet, as I continue on my journey, I may learn more and we can revisit the topic down the line.
Great.
But for today, I say we wrap it up.
Okay.
Oh, I guess I didn't give. That's okay, Ron. Don't worry about it.
I was like, man, you guys are good. I didn't see any of this.
That's okay. If you have any questions or comments related to today's show.
Keep them to yourself.
No.
Oh, sorry.
Contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, also known as X, TikTok, Pinterest, or Instagram. Oh, not TikTok, because I got locked out. We're not on TikTok temporarily.
What did you do?
No, somebody stole my identity.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure that one out.
All right. Do I get to call them mom? And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, and always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard in this podcast. And look out for one another. Take care of one another. You know, we're all in this together. So that person that you helped today may be the person that helps you tomorrow. So, yeah, look out for everybody.
Be kind.
Be kind to one another.
Till next week.